Good morning, and welcome to the White Way Radio broadcast of Mo'ili'ili Hongganji Mission. Mo'ili'ili Hongganji is a Jodo Shinshu Buddhist temple located at 902 University Avenue. Our resident minister, Reverend Toshiyuki Umitani, and the members of our temple invite you to join us at temple services and activities. If you go to our internet website at www.mo'ili'ili hongganji.org, you can find a map of our location and information about our temple and activities. This morning's program is sponsored by Mrs. Thelma Ando in memory of Mr. Minoru Matsuura. Our speaker is Dr. George Tanabe. Good morning, Dr. Tanabe.
This is George Tanabe, and I would like to welcome you to another broadcast of The White Way. The story of Prince Siddhartha, as he was called before he became the Buddha, has been told many times, and we are familiar with how the young prince grew up as a privileged heir to his father's throne in a royal palace, only to give it all up to go out on a spiritual quest that resulted in his enlightenment becoming the Buddha. As it is with all great people, the Buddha's life story became enhanced and idealized to the point at which we lose sight of the human side of his life. Even his birth is couched in the miracle of his taking 7 steps as soon as he was born, raising his right hand and saying, "This is my last rebirth." That image of the baby Buddha, right hand upraised and speaking at the moment of his birth, is enshrined in the statues that temples use at Hanamatsuri services celebrating his birth. You are all familiar with that. It is difficult to cut through the layers of idealization to get at the human person who is hidden beneath the miraculous stories. Even more difficult is to arrive at understandings of the people who surround the great religious heroes. So much has been said, for example, about the Virgin Mary, mother of Jesus. But what do we know about Joseph, Mary's husband? What was his reaction when he found out that Mary was pregnant with child, of which he was not the father? Joseph has been overshadowed by his wife Mary, and in much the same way Siddhartha's wife, Yasodhara, has been overshadowed by the Buddha. Who was Yasodhara, the wife whom Siddhartha walked out on, leaving her to raise their son as a single mother? Several years ago, I gave a White Way talk on the story called Bimba's Lament, a medieval account of what the Buddha's wife, who is called Bimba in this case, felt when the Buddha returned to his hometown after his enlightenment. She sees him surrounded by many adoring disciples and is not happy when he starts to walk toward her front door. She receives him by pouring out her complaints about how he had abandoned her, their son, and his parents. She tells him about how people accused her of not being a good wife, surely the reason why he left her. And yet, despite her well-founded resentment, she makes peace with the Buddha, invites him into her house, and kneels down to wash his feet. She would in time join his sangha as a disciple. As a story, Bimba's Lament was written centuries after the Buddha lived, but it gives us a clear sense of her feelings, as imagined by the writer of the story. Here we face the interesting intersection between fiction and history. We need to be able to distinguish between fact and fiction, especially in our own time when there are so many instances of fake news and conspiracy theories. Historians, like good journalists, should never include fiction in their factual accounts, but novelists are free to include history in their fiction. In The Tale of Genji, the masterpiece from medieval Japan that is arguably the first fully-fledged novel in world literature, Prince Genji says that writing fiction is the best way to capture and express the truths of real people's experiences. The literary genre of historical fiction aims to do just that. Let's return to the Buddha's wife, Yasodhara. Who was she? What kind of person was she? What did she feel about being the Buddha's wife? Historical sources can tell us only so much and are mostly limited to the events surrounding her. But what were her inner feelings? What was in her heart and mind? Fortunately, we have a book that tells the story of Yasodhara's entire life, and it goes deeply into her innermost thoughts and feelings. It is called Yasodhara and the Buddha, and it was written a few years ago by Vanessa Sasson, a Canadian scholar of Buddhism. Professor Sasson has read all of the original sources dealing with Yasodhara, and she takes the accounts of Yasodhara's wife and weaves fictional elements in and around the entire textual core to flesh out Yasodhara as a woman who comes across as a real human being. The result is an engaging novel, but unlike normal novels, Professor Sasson includes footnotes and a bibliography, just as you would find in any scholarly book, that allow the reader to distinguish between the factual core from the fictional dressing. But here's the important thing to remember about this creative combination of history and fiction. While the fictional parts cannot be corroborated with factual certainty, none of the imagined scenes contradict the history of Yasodhara. The entire story is totally plausible, completely believable, never impossible. Besides, we need to remember that the ancient so-called historical sources are already filled with fabulous fiction. Remember the story of the Buddha's birth? But don't take my word for it. Let me read you a short section, and you can then be your own judge. In a chapter called The Choosing, the young prince Siddhartha must choose a bride, and the palace counselors have arranged for eligible women to be introduced to him. Normally, the women would bring gifts, but Siddhartha insists on doing the opposite. He will give each one a gift, and they need not offer any to him. Yasodhara is understandably nervous about being presented to the prince, and she winds up being the last one in line. She waits anxiously as she watches all the other women go up to meet Prince Siddhartha and receive their gifts of jewels. She says, "Suddenly I heard my name being called, and a servant beckoned me toward the stage. My heart fluttered with palpitations, and fresh drops of sweat raced their way down my back. I kept my arms by my side and held my breath as I approached the prince. Siddhartha reached into the casket to bring out my gift, only to discover, to my absolute mortification, that there were no jewels left. He had just given away the last of them to the chatterbox ahead of me. Standing before the entire kingdom with my head bowed and my empty hands raised, I was overwhelmed with humiliation. I did not know what to do. I just stood there, petrified. 'It seems the casket is empty,' he said with his familiar smile. 'Apparently,' I replied, trembling despite myself. 'What should I do? Should I just go back?' 'Not just yet.' He waved away the scurrying servants who seemed frantic as they tried to solve the problem, and instead reached for his own necklace. He unclasped it and presented it to me with a grin. 'I do still have this. May I?' he asked as he motioned for me to turn around. He hadn't spoken to anyone else the entire morning, but here we were in an intimate exchange, and he was not giving me a random piece of jewelry from his coffers, but his very own necklace. I turned around and pulled my braid to the side, struggling with emotions I did not recognize. He placed the necklace around my neck and clasped it with his soft fingers. When he was done, I turned to look at him. He was the only person in the room, the only person in the 10,000 universes. No one was ushering me off the stage. We were simply standing there together, in a bubble of our own happiness, smiling at each other stupidly. Forgetting where I was, I reached for his right hand. He gave it to me, looking at me with warm curiosity. And then I did something I never imagined I had inside of me to do. I carefully removed his ring with the royal insignia. Before I placed it on my own finger, I looked up to be sure it was all right. And it was. He was smiling at me from ear to ear. He helped slide the ring onto my finger as the room burst into applause. The choosing was over. We had chosen each other. The book is called Yasodhara and the Buddha and is written by Vanessa Sassone. You can get it on Amazon. I should also tell you that I will be doing an online interview with Vanessa at this year's Hawaii Book and Music Festival in October. Check the Book and Music Festival website for the schedule. Hope to see you then, and thanks for listening today.
Thank you, Dr. Tanabe, for your talk on Siddhartha Buddha's Wife. I will be waiting to hear more at the Hawaii Book and Music Festival in October. To listen to today's broadcast and Dr. Tanabe's talk again, please click on Buddhist Teachings at our www.moili'ilihonganji.org website. And now here are some announcements. Tomorrow, June 5th, please join us for Moili'ili's Remembrance and Dharma School Teachers and Students Recognition Service, starting at 9 a.m. The Zoom link to our service can be found on the www.moili'ilihonganji.org website, though it will also be an in-person service. The speaker will be Reverend Toshiyuki Umitani. In addition to Dharma students and teachers, Moili'ili graduates will also be recognized. There will be no refreshments after the service. Following the service, the Moili'ili Honganji BWA will hold a membership meeting in person beginning at 10 a.m. in the Hondo. The following Sunday, June 12th, please join us when the guest speaker at our 9 a.m. service will be Dr. Michael Jaffe of Windward Buddhist Temple. He will be speaking on the Dharma of Change. As we come to the close of our program this morning, we would like to thank our sponsor, Mrs. Thelma Ando, and our speaker, Dr. George Tanabe. My name is Susan Morishige, and I have been your announcer technician this morning. Thank you for listening. Please join us again next week on The White Way, when our speaker should be the Reverend Sean Yagi of Aea Honganji. Namo Amida Butsu.